So we've been doing the foundational principles of Christianity, and last week we started the foundation of the image of God. In Latin, you guys don't need to know this, but if you ever want to sound cool, it's the Imago Dei. I don't know if you guys ever heard that, but that's the Latin. Trivial Pursuit might have that question. I don't know. But anyway, so it's the image of God. And last week we went over the idea of what does this really mean? And we primarily get this from Genesis 1, verse 26 through 27, where it says that God made us in his image. Both male and female, he made us both in the image of God. And throughout the Bible, what we'll see, and the reason why I'm not going to those texts is because as you guys are going through them, I'm hoping that as you guys read the Bible, you're seeing these terms that we're talking about in the foundations class. You're like, oh, like Peter talked about that. And you'll start to understand the disciples' arguments a little bit better about why we have to live the way that we're living. And last week we talked about if we are truly in the image of God, which we talked about last week, means that it's not that God resembles us. God is timeless, spaceless, eternal. It's not that God resembles us. It's that God created us with this unique ability to reflect his glory and beauty and majesty better than any other created thing. So we are the exact image of him. We reflect him better than any other created thing, and that is our purpose. We'll talk about that more tonight. But last week we laid the idea of if that's true, we must have the greatest value of any other created thing. Because if we most represent God's image, that means that our value must be the greatest. Just, you know, using that modal logic right there. And so we talked a little about what that means and why so much of our problems as humans exist is because we don't believe that. We're trying to find our own value. And because we're trying to find our own value, we doubt the value of others. That's where oppression comes from. That's where racism comes from. That's where sexism comes from. Basically, most of the problems of humanity come from us not understanding this, as well as most of the problems in our own life. When we don't believe that we have intrinsic value, just by merit of my birth, of being in the image of God, I have value. If I don't believe that, I'm going to try to make my own value. And I'm going to use people to do that. And I'm going to use things to do that. And at the end, I'll end up feeling empty and depressed and alone. Only if we receive the true value of Jesus Christ, only if we receive the image of God, do we have that intrinsic, beautiful, eternal, infinite value that God intended for us to have. Tonight, we're going to take a little one step further. We're going to talk about purpose. If we're made in the image and likeness of God, what does that mean for our purpose as humans? And something interesting to look at, we talked about last week, our value is not impacted by the fall to sin. Meaning our infinite value of being the image bearers of God is not impacted at all by our sin and by our failure. You can be in the deepest amount of sin ever, and yet it says in Romans 5, verse 11, while we were yet sinners, Christ died for you. There is no amount of sin that you can engage in that will lessen your value as a human being. That is why we as Christians, when we're talking to non-believers, even if they're the most vile sinners on the planet, we understand that they are made in the image and likeness of God, and so we treat them with respect. 1 John 4, verse 20, he talks about that. He says, anyone who says that they love God yet hates their brother, they're a liar and the truth isn't in them. How can you say that you love God whom you haven't seen and yet you hate his image bearer? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't fit. That's why we treat people with dignity and respect no matter what. Purpose, however, our purpose as human beings of being image bearers of God was affected in the fall. And we'll talk about that. But if we're made in the image of God, what is our purpose? Now, just think about it really quickly. If you make a picture, a statue, something like that, in your image and likeness, why are you doing it? For what? Because you're conceited. Because you're conceited. Why would you draw a picture of yourself? Because you're a jerk, right? So when you go to the Lincoln Memorial, that guy's a jerk. When you got a conceited jerk, that's why he's got a statue of himself. I don't care if you emancipated the slaves. Get out of here, Lincoln. You know, like, no, right? When you make a statue or a painting or a drawing of yourself, what you're trying to do is you're trying to convey a particular part of your glory to others. You guys get that? You try to convey something to other people so that when they look at the statue, they see a particular type of your glory. Why do you think the Lincoln Memorial is so big? I mean, couldn't he have made it different? Like, couldn't the Lincoln Memorial have been, like, smaller than us? And you walk up to it, and you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. It's Lincoln, you know? But the fact that it's larger than life is to reflect what? That he was larger than life. This was a president. This is someone who did something greater than we can imagine, right? He's sitting down. He's wearing a suit, right? He could have been standing up. He could have been shirtless. He could have had a hammer. There are so many ways he could have made the statue, but they made it what? They made it sitting down because he was supposed to be. He wasn't a warrior, but he was a pursuer of peace. You guys get that? So when I look at the statue of Lincoln, I'm getting a lot of things about his personhood without actually meeting him by seeing his image. Okay, you guys kind of getting that? So if that's true, if that's the way it works, if we're made in the image and likeness of God, our purpose is to reflect God's glory. That's it. That's our purpose. Now, let's talk really quickly about what does that mean. I already kind of explained it a little bit, but it's very simple. To glory is just a word. It's a word that we don't really use too much nowadays, unless we're talking about sports. For some reason, when we're talking about sports, the Olympics, glory is all over that. It was glorious. That was amazing, man. They saw, you know, whenever they do the opening sequence for the Olympics, the word glory is all over the place. What glory? People are chasing glory here, and we're all like, yeah, we understand it. But then I say glory in church, and you're all like, what? You know, it's bizarre, isn't it? All glory means is it means beauty, excellency, majesty, splendor, excellency, that kind of thing. That's what it means, etc., etc. And so to glorify something or someone is to reveal or to demonstrate their excellency, majesty, splendor, that kind of thing. Do you guys get that? So if I'm in the image and likeness of God, my job, my purpose for life, the exact reason of why I exist is to reflect, is to demonstrate to the world, to the universe, as a matter of fact. Even angels, by the way, are getting lessons from us about the glory of God. We see this in the book of Job as well as in Ephesians, which is crazy to think about. But we are demonstrating to all of creation God's attributes, his beauty, his majesty, and his splendor. And we'll talk about how we do that in a second and why we're not doing that currently. Why the fall keeps us from doing this perfectly anyway. Now here comes the first objection. Priscilla actually said it, but remember I said, you know, what does it mean when someone makes a statue of themselves, and Priscilla said that they're conceited? Now here's the objection. People will be like, okay, so God didn't create one statue of himself. He created 7 billion at all times walking around. Sounds pretty conceited, you know. Like, I mean, just not judging, but it sounds kind of conceited. It sounds like God is kind of a glory hog, that he just wants it all to be about him. And is that really good? I mean, isn't God kind of vain or selfish? Now, before I even answer that question, let me just point something out. That very mentality that you have, first of all, the ability that you have to question God came from who? God. God gave you your consciousness and your ability to think and to reason. So your very ability to defame God comes from God. C.S. Lewis put it this way. He said it's like sawing the very branch that you're sitting on. You know, it's not too bright. But anyway, not even getting into that. This mentality is also a result of the fall. If you remember during the temptation of Adam and Eve in the garden, the serpent went to them and he says, you will not die if you eat the fruit. You will be like God. See what he's getting at? Who's God to receive all the glory? Man, who's God to say that I'm the most excellent, amazing thing in the universe and you should live your entire life glorifying me and showing my splendor to the universe? Who's God to say that? Maybe you deserve a little glory. Live for yourself, bro. You see, Satan sees himself as a great liberator. He's like, man, I'm out for humankind. You know, they're having to serve and worship God, and I'm setting them free. You know, why don't you make up your own mind about what you want to glorify, what you want to demonstrate the value of? I mean, who is God to say that you have to glorify him with your every breath? Simple answer to that is he's God, right? He can do what he wants. But there's an actual better answer than that, and we'll get into it. Now, the first way that I'm going to answer that objection is actually to explain how you glorify something or someone. Most of us don't really, like I said, because we don't use this lingo in our day-to-day life, it's hard for us to kind of grab what is meant when I say that we must do everything to the glory of God. 1 Corinthians 10:31, whether you eat or drink, do all to the glory of God. He's saying that I should be so reflecting the glory of God that even when I'm at Golden Corral, people will look at me eating and being like, man, my God is awesome. You know, like that's what he's saying. I'm glorifying God no matter what. You know, no matter what I do, God's glory is on my mind. That's what he's saying. And we got to ask the question of how do you glorify someone? How do you glorify someone? Because here's the deal. You could actually glorify anything. And we all glorify things all the time, every day. And it's not wrong to do that, by the way. What the Bible's saying is that you must glorify God supremely. Now here's how you glorify God. Here's how you glorify anyone, by the way. First is imitation. You glorify someone by imitation. Remember, you show their value, you show their splendor, their beauty, their majesty, right? If I really adore someone and look up to them, I'm going to imitate what they do, right? I mean, I wouldn't look at someone and be like, man, I really look up to that guy. And then I totally reinvent the wheel and do things completely opposite of them. Does that make sense? If I was like, man, I really look up to Bo, and then I start a church and I do things totally different than Bo and Scott, you guys would be like, huh, you say you look up to them, but you're not doing anything they do, which demonstrates to me that you really don't look up to them. I mean, is there any way for a kid to really make their parents smile more than when they start imitating them? Right? When they start doing things, maybe the good things that the parent does. It doesn't really, when you imitate the bad things, that just makes the parent self-conscious of like, you shouldn't say that. You know, like you shouldn't do that, right? You know, just imitate the good things about me. Ignore the bad things, right? But I mean, imitation is definitely, it's true. It's the sincerest form of flattery. If you really wanted to show someone, show people the beauty, excellency, and splendor of another human being, you imitate them. Right, you spend your life imitating that person. The second thing is you trust them and you obey them. Right, so if I said, for instance, like, man, I want to glorify my wife, and she asks me to do something, I'm like, nah. Am I demonstrating her beauty or her splendor in my life? No, right? I don't trust her with anything. If I'm like leaving the house and I'm like, hey, Emma, you know, I'm going to actually have my brother watch you while you're at the house because I don't really trust you. You know, I'm worried they're going to burn the place down. You know, I'm not demonstrating any beauty. I'm not demonstrating any value in our relationship by lacking trust, right? If I want to glorify someone, I have to trust them and I have to obey them. That has to be part of my glorification. The third one is probably the most important. You must fully and supremely enjoy something or someone. And that joy expresses itself in praise. We call that worship. Right? The joy that I have in a person expresses itself in worship. I don't have to tell lovers to worship one another. Right? It just comes out. It's not like when I tell my wife, I love you, she was like in the dark. She's like, I don't know if Peter loves me. And then I tell her for the fifth time today, and she's like, oh, thank God. You know. And then she forgets, and then I tell her again, she's like, oh, thank God. You know. The reason why I say it over and over and over again is because I love her so much, so unbelievably amount, that it just overflows in my speech. You guys get that? It would be harder for me to hold it in than would it be for me to let it out. And that's what you want, right? If I wanted to show someone the value of my wife, wouldn't it be through that type of praise? Right? And not just praising her when she's here, but praising her when she's not here, right? When you guys are asking me, like, how's my marriage? If I was like, oh, man, what a drag, you know? But we'll get through it, you know? you guys would be like, well, okay, there's not a whole lot of greatness in that marriage. You know, there's not a lot of greatness in Emma. But if even when she's not here, I'm still seeing her praise, I'm still just like, I just can't help but say, like, man, like, she's so great, you know? She's so amazing. She's so beautiful. You know, I just can't help saying things like that. That's the truest form of glory there is. And there's many ways that you can express that. It's not just verbally, but it's through, you guys may have heard the five love languages, right? That's all about praise. That's praise. That's what it is, right? Acts of service. How do I serve her? How do I affirm her in my speech, right? How do I spend time with her? Do I spend quality time with her? It's no use me telling people how amazing Emma is and then I don't spend any time with her. You're like, well, she must not be that amazing because you're more hanging out with your buddies than you are her. Right? To demonstrate value to someone is supreme enjoyment that expresses itself in supreme praise. Now, if you think about it, if any one of those three things are missing, it's not glorification. Right? I could enjoy Emma supremely, and I could praise her with every breath of my life. But if I don't trust her, and I don't try any amount of me to try to imitate what she's doing, you guys would be like, well, I don't really see a whole lot of value in the way that you look at your wife. Or if you flip it on the other side, if I imitate somebody and I trust them and I obey them with all my heart, but I don't enjoy them at all, is that very glorious? Right, and by the way, that's the way that most religious people live, right? I trust God, I obey God, I imitate God, but do you enjoy Him? Man, are you pleased in Him? Is He your treasure? See, if that's not true, then you are not glorifying Him. See, all three must be present at all times in order for us to glorify God. Now, here's the second way I'm going to answer this. So this kind of feeds into the second one. Making us for this purpose was actually one of the most loving things that God has ever done for us to demonstrate His care for us. And here's why. What is more worthy than God? To put it another way, what is a better thing that He could have put us on this earth to glorify? He could have put us on this earth and be like, glorify the trees, man. Imitate the trees. You know, that's amazing. You know, we'd be like, that's cool. You could imitate trees, I guess, and you could glorify trees. But is it better than God? Is it greater than God? See, and the reason why we're so empty inside of our lives is maybe because God created us for this supreme amount of glory in reflecting Him, and we're settling for glorifying things that He created. You guys get that? And whether it's conscious or subconscious, we do these things all the time. Like I said, we glorify things all the time. It's demonstrated in our actions every single day. What you serve is what you glorify supremely. Just think about what's the thing that you find most enjoyment in, and what's the thing that you serve most readily. That is the thing that you glorify most supremely. It doesn't necessarily have to be God. Some of us glorify our jobs, our careers. People look at my life and they would say, man, Peter's career seems amazing. Dude, he spends all of his time there. He loves it. He worships it. He praises it. Man, that is his career. That's everything to him. Some people worship their families and glorify their families. Some people glorify themselves. It's all about them. But no matter what you're doing, if you're not glorifying God, there's going to be a welling emptiness inside of you because you were made for more than that. See, the most supreme act of love that God could give us is to create us for the most supreme purpose. I mean, what father would there be that would honestly want second best for their children? That, you know, they have their kid and they're like, hey, you know, you're smart enough to go to Harvard, but I don't care. You're going to ASU. You know, like that. I mean, it's a great school, but it's not Harvard. You know what I mean? Like every father, every parent, if you really genuinely love your child, you want what's best for them. For God to create us for anything less than glorification of Him would demonstrate apathy and not caring about us. He wanted what was best for us, so He created us for the best. Here's the third thing. All of the problems that we have as a species, internally, externally, they all stem from us falling out of this supreme purpose. Right, so when we fell in the garden, we fell out of this purpose. We still maintain the image of God in our value system, but we lack the image of God in our purpose. We lack the purpose that we were created to do. Now, let me explain that by going over a couple things. Let's take one. I'm just going to take two, by the way. Number one is our insecurity. Okay, every single person, we're born pretty much knowing that we were created for something higher than ourselves. Right? No kid is ever born just thinking like, I think my life is meaningless. You know, I think that I'm just here, I live and I die. Right? No kid believes that. They watch superhero movies and they're like, I could be like that. You know, they think that they were bred for some great purpose. They think that they were really, really designed for something great. I mean, think about all the popular movies and TV shows that we like and that we watch. I mean, whenever you have a great epic, it's always a person that's born that has a purpose that's far greater than themselves that they're just kind of thrust into, and they save the world. And we're all watching that. We're all like, I'm that guy, you know? I could be that guy. I'm that person. I was created for something greater than myself. We all feel that deep within our bones. Well, what happens to us? Eventually, we grow up. And we start thinking, like, maybe I wasn't created for a higher purpose. Maybe we try to fulfill some sort of a higher purpose, and we just don't find it. And so we find inside of ourselves this gnawing insecurity that's in us all the time. And this is how it manifests. Our insecurity manifests this way. We never feel like we're actually measuring up. we feel like there's something that we're supposed to be doing, but we're not actually doing it. And it manifests in every aspect of your life. It's going to manifest in the way that you see yourself in the mirror, your looks. It's going to manifest in your intelligence. You're going to feel like I'm not intelligent enough. It's going to manifest in whatever job you pick. No matter if you're Bill freaking Gates, he still looks at his life and he's like, man, that's stuff I'm not doing. Right? Everybody in this world feels this gnawing emptiness inside of their soul that they feel like there's something that they were created to do that they're not doing. Or they're not doing right at any point. It's in all of us. And this insecurity leads us to a lot of problems we'll talk about in a second. But here are the human solutions that we've come up with to deal with this emptiness. The first one is the secular option, and that is, there is no greater purpose. Right? You're living in this little dream world. There is no greater purpose. You live, you eat, you die, and that's it. And you just need to grow up and deal with it. You know? Stop thinking that you're special. Stop thinking that you're a beautiful, unique snowflake. You're just carbon matter, and you're going to decay, and live your life. Yeah, and they're the great liberators. We'll talk about why they think they're so great in a second. The second way is that we were created for a great purpose, but you must find your own. So none of our purposes are the same. And so if you want to have meaning and value and purpose in your life, you must discover your own purpose and live that to the extent that you want. And that will fulfill you. Okay? Now, I will tell you that the cynical version of there is no greater purpose, those people tend to be far more functional than the second people. Because if you believe there is a great purpose out there, you just need to find it yourself. That's why a lot of people our age, they'll say things like, I'm out there, I'm going to try to find myself. What do they mean? They're trying to find their purpose. They're trying to find their reason for existence. And they go out and they look and they look and they look. And they might find something, but it's probably not going to fulfill what they wanted. No matter what they find, no matter what relationship they get into, no matter what career path they choose, there's always going to be that this gnawing insecurity is going to always be playing in the back of their head. They can't quiet it. And so what they do is they switch from thing to thing, person to person. They can't commit. They can't stay in one spot. They have to move from place. They have to move from careers. They have to change relationships all the time, all the while trying to find this grand purpose that is going to finally satisfy their souls, and they never find it. Now, the reason why the people that say that there is no greater purpose, the reason why I said that they're more functional is because they're able to commit to something. So no matter what job or career they pick, no matter what family they end up in, they'll just be like, well, you know, this is just how it is. No one's happy. There is no rainbow. There is no unicorns. There is no Santa Claus. You just live and you die, and that's it. You know, and they just kind of suck it up, and they live their life. And guess which type our generation is? Right? We're not the cynical type, right? We believe in dreams, man. We believe in finding your own destiny, you know, and then discover your own path. You know, we like it, you know, and that's what we try to do in our own lives. And that's why we're incredibly miserable and in despair. If you look at other countries, this is an interesting thing. I like sociology and I like psychology and anthropology and all those things, all those ologies, right? And when I study other cultures, I'll see that the cultures that have this viewpoint of just there is no greater purpose, you live for your family, you live for your culture, and then you die, those people are actually incredibly successful. And they do a lot of great things, and they live their lives, and they die relatively happy. Our generation is morbidly depressed because we have this. We focus more on the gnawing emptiness. See, the other people in the other cultures, when they feel that emptiness, that insecurity in them, they just suppress it. When we feel it, we feel that as like, oh my gosh, this is a sign that I need to do something different. And a lot of us think it's a sign from God, right? I don't feel happy in this. That's a sign from God to move, you know? And so I'm moving around and I blame God for that gnawing emptiness. But it's not God's fault. It's my fault because I'm not doing what I was designed to do. Now, here's the thing. If we were truly made to glorify God, no other purpose will satisfy us. If you were created for the best, anything less than the best is going to fall short, right? If you, it doesn't matter what career you have, like I said, it doesn't matter what career, what family, no matter what you do, you will always have this insecurity in you until you finally slip into your true purpose, which is to glorify God. That's the only way you're going to be happy. You see, it works like this. Let's take this iPad for a second. I have this nifty little iPad that I love, right? And it has purpose. Purpose is to hold information and data so I could read it at my own leisure, right? It has a purpose. It has a wonderful purpose, a great purpose to serve me, and I like that, right? And this iPad functions phenomenally. as in that avenue. As long as I keep it in that avenue, it functions amazingly. But if I were to take this iPad and say, you know what, I don't really think that it's living up to its potential as an iPad. I think it would be far better suited as a hammer. You know, I could do that, and it might function like that for a second, but here's the deal. Number one, it will never live up to its potential. And number two, by taking it outside of its design parameters, I'm damaging it. You guys get that? So number one, if you choose not to glorify God and you choose to glorify self or glorify the world or glorify whatever, number one, just know you'll never be happy. And number two, it will be at the destruction of your own soul. But you could do it. You know, you can go for it. But those are the consequences that you're going to have to deal with. It'll destroy you, and it will ultimately leave you empty and hollow. And that is why, like I said, a lot of wickedness comes out of that, which we'll talk about in a second. Now, I'll also say this. I said that one part that says, you know, there is no greater purpose, they see themselves as humble. They'll say, like, you know, how could you look at all the vast cosmos and say that we're the most important things in it? That's so arrogant. You know, we're humble. We say, find your own path. You know, we say there is no greater purpose. Here's the reality, though. That's false humility. That's false humility. Here's why it's false humility. If God really did create us in his image and likeness, and he said that you are greater than any other created thing, for you to disagree with him is not humility, it's pride. For you to look at the creator of the entire universe and say, I think you got that wrong, you know, but I'm being humble because I'm disagreeing with you. But it doesn't work, right? Does that make sense? It's not humility because it's not submission. You're still submitting to the God of your own life, and you're not submitting to the God of the universe. True, genuine humility is submission to God. And whatever God says about me, I'm okay with. And the beautiful thing about what God says about me is that it's amazing. Right? What a great message. Why would you want to disagree with that message? Everything inside of your heart is now validated. We're born thinking that we have this divine, amazing purpose that is above us, and we discover through the Bible that that's true. We're born thinking that we have value and meaning and intrinsic worth that's far more valuable than an animal, a plant, or tree, or anything like that. And we live our lives thinking that the things that we do have meaning and value, and we think that they're going to extend forward into generations. We think that the wrongs done to us need to be justified and rectified. And we live this way, and we act this way. And then when we read these things in the Bible, that everything that you believe to be true is actually true because God said so, we still don't want to submit to him. Isn't that weird? Instead, we would rather suppress all of our natural instincts and call that humility. Maybe all those instincts are supposed to point us to truth. That the reason why you feel that way is because it is that way. And the only way for you to be free is to, instead of listening to yourself, to shut up and listen to God. Jesus put it this way. He says, my sheep hear my voice, and I call them by name. What's he saying? Saying, first of all, you need to stop listening to your own voice, and don't call it humility when you start downing on yourself and thinking of yourself as less of a person. That's not humility. That's arrogance and disagreeing with God. Number one, stop talking. Listen to me. Number two, I'm going to tell you who you are. I call you by name. That's humility. That's what we're supposed to be doing. That's the reality. The next thing that I want to talk about is what all this does to us. So from insecurity, from dissatisfaction, that's where all the wickedness that we commit comes from. Because I feel insecure, that's why I oppress other people, right? I think you guys all heard this in school, right? Why do bullies become bullies? Because they're insecure, right? It's true. Because I feel insecure about who I am, I beat up on weaker people to feel better about who I am. Right? Every amount of wickedness that comes from me, whether it be violence, whether it be anger, whether it be subjugation, whether it be jealousy, whether it be greed, whether it be lust, whether it be hatred, whatever comes out of your life, that is a result of your insecurity and your dissatisfaction manifesting itself in negative ways towards others. And as long as that insecurity and dissatisfaction exists inside of you, you'll never be better. You can't just conquer that. You can't just say, I'm going to stop being insecure. Well, good luck with that. I'm going to start thinking, I'm going to start validating myself. Well, you can start validating yourself, but once again, that's feeding more of your selfishness. And if your selfishness is the problem, your selfishness isn't a very good solution, is it? Right? Let's talk about the second thing. If I'm not imitating God, made in the image and likeness of God, right? I should supremely imitate him. If I'm not imitating God, who am I imitating now? You guys get that? You have to imitate something. We're all born in a culture, in a society with parents and family members and all these other people around us. You're going to imitate somebody because that's how we learn. That's how we grow. And the question is who are you imitating? And if you're not imitating God, then you're not imitating the best, are you? Now, I could imitate some very, very honorable people in my life. But the thing about it is, no matter how great a man is, he's still fallen. And there's still going to be faults and flaws in what he does. And a lot of us, when we're imitating things, you know, we think that we're on our own people. We think that we're making up our own mind. But if I look at your life, if I really evaluated it, you know what I would find? That you're imitating your parents, you're imitating your family, you're imitating your culture, you're imitating your friends. And some of their examples might be very good, but some of their examples might be very, very bad. And a lot, like I said, the vast majority, almost all, of the sins and evilness that exist inside the world is because of bad imitations. I mean, how many people in this room have been hurt and violated by people who claim that they love them? Right? Pretty much all of us, right? Now, when you think about that, it's like, did they actually believe what they were saying when they said, I love you? Probably. I'm not going to argue that. But maybe, just maybe, they learned how to love from a bad source. Maybe they're imitating something that's not good. And they think it is. Maybe they're not even aware of what they're imitating. And here's the thing, you may not be aware of it either, but you're imitating something and someone, and if it's not God, it's not perfect. Here's the thing, all the commandments that were made by God were made based on his nature. You guys understand that? It's not like he arbitrarily selected things and be like, you know, I think that I'm going to make courageousness good and cowardliness evil. And I think I'm going to make telling the truth good and lying bad. That's not what happened. God, by his nature, dictated his nature to us through the form of commandments. So God is truth. So he said, telling lies is bad. God is not covetous. So he said, covetousness is bad. You guys get that? God is not murderous. So murder is bad. That's how he dictated the laws and commandments that we have. Now, if we're made in the image and likeness of God, that means we share his nature. And that means to sin against the commandments of God is to sin against your very soul. And it will rot you away and it will ruin your life. See, our culture and society, we've all been growing. We've all been thinking like, we could do better than God. We could do better than God. You see, you're still falling for the same temptation as Adam and Eve. You can imitate what you want. You can decide what's good and evil. Who's God to tell you what's good and evil and what's right and wrong? And so because we disagree with God on certain aspects and because we're imitating something that's not him, that's where all your sin and corruption comes from. For a long time, humanity thought it was great to subjugate women. We thought it was awesome. For a long time, Western Europeans thought it was amazing to enslave Africans. Was it good to imitate them? Well, back in the day it was, but now we look back on that, we're like, what a bunch of idiots. There might be some stuff that our culture is doing today that your great-great-grandchildren will look at with disgust. And you think you're so enlightened and you think you're so ahead of the curve. The Word of God always stands and God's image never fades. If you want to imitate what is right and you want to imitate what's going to actually help you, you must imitate Him. See, that's where all the evil in the world comes from, is from our falling out of sync with the very glorification of God that we were designed to do. Now, how do we get it back? Simple answer is the cross. Now, this is an interesting thing about our God. Our God declares that he is most glorified in the cross. Other gods aren't like that. Other gods are like, yeah, I'm most glorified when I created everything. I'm most glorified in my justice and my mercy and my love or whatever. They'll say things like that. Our God said, no, you know what? If you really want to understand my beauty, my splendor, my excellency, you know where you look? You look at the moment where I was stripped naked, beaten to a bloody pulp, and crucified in front of everybody in the most humiliating, shameful way ever as I cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? That's where I'm most beautiful. Isn't that crazy? That's where God's splendor and glory is most clearly seen, because that's where his love was poured out, where his justice and mercy were met. Jesus, over and over again, he said, when they raise up the Son of Man himself, you will see my glory. He said in John chapter 14, he says, after tonight, after I'm crucified, you will know how much I love my Father and how much I glorify his name. See, that's where his glory was most clearly evident. And that's where we need to look if we want to receive the glory that we've lost. You see, without the cross, without this beautiful act of God, you could never glorify God. We could never glorify Him. Why? Because like I said, how are you going to deal with your insecurity? How are you going to deal with that? See, unless there's a demonstration of God's valuation of your life, your insecurity and your inferiority complex are going to run rampant and you're going to continue to sin. See, here's how it goes in my life. I view pornography. Why? Because I feel insecure about myself, because I want comfort and pleasure outside of God's plan, and I'm imitating the world that I know. You guys get that? Now, here's the thing. If I say, I'm going to stand up and I'm not going to do this anymore, number one, why am I standing up to it? Is it because I want to glorify God? Is it because I'm enjoying Him so much that I want to honor His name? Is it because I'm imitating Him? Is it because I'm trusting and obeying Him? No. It's because I feel rotten about me. And I want to change for me. It's continued self-glorification that will just feed insecurity. It will never cure it. And you know how you know when you're in this pattern? Right? No matter what sin it is, pick any sin in your life that you habitually go back to. Okay? No matter how long you go without doing it, there will always be a fear in the back of your head, this gnawing sensation that you know, I'm going to do this again. And you may even start saying something like, this is just the person that I am. Now, why are you saying that? Why are you focusing so much on yourself when you're supposed to be focusing on who? God. When you fail to sin, how do you feel? You feel terrible. You feel wretched. You feel rotten. You feel like God's not with you. You feel like He's against you. You feel like He's angry with you and upset with you. Where does that come from? Does that come from a viewing of the cross? And saying like, man, God's love and mercy was poured out for me on the cross and He bore all the condemnation of the sin that I committed when I fell out of His glory? Is that where you're looking? No, you're looking at you, right? I can't believe I did that again. I can't believe I failed again. What kind of person am I, right? It's all about you. So you could conquer every sin in your life and never give any glory to God. See, only in the cross and the demonstration of God's wonderful, wonderful love for us is our inferiority complex and our insecurity and our dissatisfaction finally healed. And only in the wake of that could you ever hope to stand up to any of your sins. See, only in the validation of God the Father, only when God looks at you and says, well done, good and faithful servant, you are clean, you are perfect, you are pure, only in light of those words could you ever fight your sin, because your sin is a result of your insecurity. See, you could never beat it. See, that was the problem with me. The more insecure I felt, the more I viewed porn. The more I viewed porn, the more insecure I was. The more insecure I felt, the more I viewed porn. Do you guys get that? And it was this constant cycle. I can never get off the cycle because I never had the validation of Christ. I was working for the validation of Christ, and so because of that, I never achieved it. The only way you're going to have the validation of Christ is if you accept it by faith, and that glorifies Him. See, it doesn't glorify God when He looks at you and says, you're clean, to look back at Him and say, I don't know though. Is that trusting Him? Is that obeying Him? Is that enjoying what He did for you and giving glory to it? No. You see, the more we fight our sin, the more we demonstrate our faithfulness towards God, you see, I'm not fighting my sin in order to be a better person. That comes from insecurity. So many people are righteous because of how insecure they are and because they're just looking for another high. See, I can't get satisfaction in drugs and alcohol anymore, so I'm going to try to find it in church. It's still selfishness and it's still going to leave you empty. You'll never find victory that way. You'll never find anything of value that way. That is why it's said that you absolutely cannot honor God one bit unless you're first saved. That's why the idea, by the way, I mean, this is getting into a little bit of theology with you guys, but that is why every cult that says the cross of Jesus Christ is great, but you must work also to be saved is absolute heresy. Because if you're not saved and you don't have that validation from God, how are you going to fight the very thing that you're trying to get free from? How are you going to have any amount of victory in that? To put it another way, you're asking somebody to fight a sin that they have no power to defeat in order to be accepted by God. So that means, guess what? They'll never be accepted by God. Hebrews 10, verse 14 says it this way. It's a little bit of theological terminology for you guys, but I'm going to say it anyway. He has perfected forever by one offering those who are being sanctified. Sanctified is another word for being made like God, to be brought into line with Him and imitating Him perfectly. Okay? The only people who are being sanctified are people who are, get this, perfected forever. If you look inside and you say, I'm pretty good, I don't know if I'm perfected forever though, you cannot be sanctified. Only the person who is absolutely confident by that by the blood of Jesus Christ alone and by His word alone, I am absolutely flawless, perfect in glory and beauty, can they be sanctified. If you have any doubt as to your value and your purpose, you can never be sanctified. You will never be more like Christ. You will only be feeding your ego and your selfishness. Next thing is, we stop sinning because we're satisfied in Christ. So here's how it looks for a Christian. Why do we give up sins? We give up sins because in our process of obeying and trusting and enjoying Christ in everything that we're doing, we look at our lives and we're always pursuing greater intimacy with Him. And here's the thing. If the greatest amount of joy exists inside of our lives when we're in line with God and glorify Him, what the Christian looks in their life, whenever we see sin, no matter what form it takes, what we're supposed to see when we look at it is an obstacle to our joy. But instead, what usually we see is we see sin as our joy and God as an obstacle to our good time. As long as you have that perspective in your mind, you'll never be free. Because true glory comes from enjoying. You cannot glorify God if you do not enjoy Him supremely. It's impossible. But if you enjoy God supremely, you will follow Him with everything that you do. See, the Christian life is a pursuit of joy in Christ. See, the reason why I do not view pornography anymore is not because it's icky. You know, it's bad, it's evil, wicked, blah, blah, blah. That's not why. The reason why is because the pleasure, the satisfaction, and the intimacy of Christ is far greater than anything I ever found in this world, including pornography. Nothing in this world can even hold the slightest candle to the excellency and the brilliance and the majesty of God. So you will never find any pleasure that is greater or more supreme than Him. That's why we follow Him. That's why we pursue Him. And that brings Him glory. That makes Him look beautiful, doesn't it? As opposed to you guys looking at your lives and looking at your friends, they're like, dude, why don't you drink? I'll tell you why. Liver damage. You know, I don't want to have liver damage. You know, well, why don't you do drugs? Because I want to have a good career one day, and that's going to ruin my chances. Hey, that glorifies your career and your body, but does it glorify God? No. Only when we look at people and say, because Jesus is better, is He truly magnified, is He truly honored in our lives. That's the only way. We're pursuing greater joy and intimacy with Him all the time, every day. And that's what glorifies Him. That's what aligns us in His purpose. I'm going to end this by reading one last quote from C.S. Lewis's book, Weight of Glory. He says this, at the present time, we are on the outside of the world, the wrong side of the door. Right? So we want to glorify God perfectly, but we can't. We discern the freshness and purity of morning, but they do not make us fresh or pure. We cannot mingle with the splendors that we see, but all the leaves of the New Testament are rustling with the rumor that it will not always be so. Someday, God willing, we will get in. When human souls have become as perfect in voluntary obedience as the inanimate creation is in its lifeless obedience, then they will put on its glory, or rather, the greater glory of which nature is only the first sketch. See, all creation is waiting for us to be aligned with the glory of God. Why? Because through our willing, voluntary submission to Him, God is most glorified. That's what we're here for. That's what we're doing. And that's what will make us truly joyous and happy. Let me pray, and then if you guys have any questions, you got about 10 minutes left. Dear God, I want to thank You so much that You have created us for such a high and holy purpose, and we're so very thankful for it. I pray that You would teach us how to glorify You in our lives, Lord, how to find that amazing joy in You and our satisfaction in You. Please help us with our insecurity. Help us with our dissatisfaction. Help us to trust You and to love You more. In Your name, amen.